This is September 23rd, 2018. And I'm going to comment on a koan this morning. It's from Blue Cliff Record, number 55, Dogos I Won't Say. When I think of koans that explicitly address the matter of death and dying, this is always the one I think of. I found that yesterday after Audrey Fernandez died yesterday morning, and then I was over there with her and the family, that this was just pressing on my mind too much to do any other topic of for Taisho. And it's been, according to what I've jotted down, it's been 9 years since I commented on this koan. So we'll first read through the koan. One day Dogo, he's a Chinese master, Dogo, accompanied by his disciple Zengen, went to pay his condolences at the house of a man who had just died in the neighborhood of their temple. Zengen, the disciple, tapping the coffin, said, "Alive or dead?" Dogo said, "I won't say alive, and I won't say dead." Zengen said, "Why won't you say?" Dogo said, "I won't say." Then on their way home, after the service, Zengen said, "Teacher, if you don't tell me, I will hit you." Dogo said, "You may hit me if you like, but I won't say." And at that, Zengen struck his teacher, Dogo. And then some years passed. Dogo passed away, and Zengen went to see Sekiso, another great master, and brought up the foregoing story. Sekiso said, "I won't say alive, and I won't say dead." And upon these words, Zengen had a realization. And then there's a bit more to this case, but let's wait until later to read the rest of it. This is really the climax of the koan, Zengen coming to awakening. We have a little material on this Dogo. He's a Chinese master, as virtually all of these masters are in the koan collections. His Chinese name was Dao Wu Yuan Ji. But as always, because the Chinese versions of the Japanese names are easier to pronounce, I'm just going to stick with the Japanized versions, Dogo and Zengen. Dogo's dates were 769 to 835, and he was a disciple of another famous Chinese master, Yao Shan. But interestingly enough, he was 7 years older than Yao Shan. I'm reading here from Zen's Chinese Heritage, by Andy Ferguson. Some of this material is not particularly interesting. He did receive Dharma transmission from Yao Shan. That's all we have as far as biographical material about him. But we do have a couple of dialogues involving Dogo. One day, Zen Master Yao Shan asked his disciple Dogo. Let's go stay with Dogo. Yaoshan asked Dogo, "Where have you been?" Dogo said, "Walking on the mountain." Yaoshan said, "Without leaving this room, quickly speak." Dogo said, "On the mountains the birds are white as snow. At the bottom of the brook, the fish never stop swimming." It's the end of the dialogue. One day, Dogo picked up his hat to go out. Yunyan, another master, Yunyan pointed to the hat and said, "What does this do?" Dogo said, "It has a use." Yunyan said, "If you suddenly encountered a violent storm, then what?" Dogo said, "It would cover me." Yunyan said, "Does the hat also have a cover?" Dogo said, "Yes, it does, but its cover never leaks." What does he mean by that? What's the cover? There's another one. This is actually a koan in another koan collection, the Shoyoroku, the Book of Serenity. Gueshan, it's yet another Chinese master, Gueshan asked Dogo, "Where did you go?" Dogo said, "To see a doctor." Gueshan said, "How many people are sick?" Very pointed, provocative question. How many people are sick? Obviously, he's not asking for a number. Dogo said, "Some are sick, some are not." Gueshan said, "Is one who is not sick the monk Dogo?" Dogo said, "Being sick or not sick has nothing to do with it. Speak, speak." To which Gueshan said, "Being able to speak has nothing to do with it." Good one. And then in the year he died, when Dogo became ill, his condition turned grave, and the monks came to inquire about his welfare. Dogo said to them, "Do you understand the phrase, having received, making restitution?" The monks were startled by these words. 10 days later, just before his death, Dogo said to the congregation, "I'll go to the west. I'll go to the west. I shouldn't go east." And upon saying these words, Dogo died. And then it just says, as a kind of epilogue here, a few bones remained in his cremated remains. And later it was struck by lightning and moved, that is a stupa. The stupa was struck by lightning and moved to the south side of Mount Shishuang. So that's the master, the first master in this koan. We don't have really any information about this Zengen. Chinese, of course. So I'll just skip on to the second master, Sekiso. He's in this book I'm reading from, Zen's Chinese Heritage, you have to deal with three names for each person. There's the original pinyin name, the one system of Chinese spelling, and then the more recent one, and then also the Japanized versions. I thought I had marked where that is, but I'll find it in a minute here. So Sekiso, his Chinese name is Shi Shuang. Can't be right because it's many pages farther, like 200 pages farther, and it's in chronological order, these. So I'm just going to skip over Sekiso. We have enough material without him. So back to the koan. One day Dogo, he's on his way to this home in their neighborhood of the temple. He was accompanied by his disciple Zengen. They were going there to pay condolences at the house of a man who just died. And they must have been standing over the coffin. Regarding burials versus cremations, I haven't done much research on this, but I have heard that whereas in Japan cremation is standard after death, in China it wasn't always so, and that they were often buried. So there's nothing about Buddhist ritual that says you need to be cremated. In Japan, which is such a relatively small country, it is a practical reason to do the cremation rather than filling up valuable land with cemeteries. But China, of course, is an immense country, so they must have felt they had that option. But there it was. There's the coffin. And they're standing there, obviously, and Zengen, alive or dead? Now, what kind of question is that? He knows that the man is dead in the conventional sense. That's why they went there. He's in a coffin. So what could he mean, alive or dead? He must have felt in his body, maybe, that this recently, very recently deceased man, although dead in a conventional sense, was not gone somehow. As I explained to Audrey's sons and some others in the family yesterday, there is this, after death, there is this gray area, this tenuous state, where even though one may be pronounced clinically dead by science, according to Buddhist understanding, there is some kind of life force that hangs on, at least for the first 3 days. This is the prescribed thing in Buddhism, is that you don't tamper with the body for 3 days. You don't do an autopsy on the body. The idea being that cutting into the body, it would somehow, there'd be some kind of a very faint reaction on the part of whatever whatever is left there, whatever life force is left there. And so I know in Audrey's case that she made clear that it would be, the body would not be, there'd be no autopsy or cremation within the first 3 days. And funeral homes now have learned to honor that, and they put them in refrigeration. Although it's really not always essential. When Roshi Kaplow died, we had him here in the Zendo in a coffin for 3 days, and it wasn't too long. It wasn't necessary to have him refrigerated. But can you understand how it is that you might, in some very subtle sense, there is still a presence right after death? It's besides the body, the corpse. I don't know how many of you have sat next to a corpse, but it's. I don't think it's my imagination to, when you feel there is still a presence there. It's a very moving experience to do that. If you ever have the chance, don't be afraid. Just sit next to the corpse. I did that with my father. It's quite awe-inspiring. I'm going to read from Roshi Kaplow's great book on death and dying, called The Zen of Living and Dying. It's called The Zen of Living and Dying. I have an earlier version here called The Wheel of Life and Death. But there's some very good material in here. I can't recommend any book more highly than his The Zen of Living and Dying, or this earlier version of it. It is so thorough. It is exhaustive. And it's not just for Buddhists. He draws from all the religious traditions and beyond that, other sources. He tells a story here involving another great, great, famous Chinese master, Nanxuan, or Nansen. When he died, one of his senior disciples stood in front of the master's coffin and gave a loud laugh. One of the monks, who was also a student of Nanxuan, reproached him, saying, "Wasn't he your teacher? Why do you laugh when you should be grieving for him?" The disciple said, "If you can say an appropriate word that fulfills the Buddha's teaching, I will grieve." And the monk stood mute. And then this other disciple who'd laughed, he said, "Alas, our teacher has truly gone," and he wept loudly. Now, we don't want to get too caught up in this story. You could see that the disciple who was laughing may have been doing so to test the monk, to see what kind of reaction he would get from him. Surely, and I think many of you are old enough to know this, surely there's no right or wrong way to grieve. There's no right or wrong reaction to the death of someone close to you. It plays out in so many ways. Never, ever should we impose our notions about how people react to others' death. But that's what the monk was doing. You should be grieving. I think a common experience after the death of someone close to you is you go through waves. You go through different responses. You can be fine for a day or two, and then suddenly you're slapped with a wave of grief just when doing the most ordinary thing. Or, yeah, there's no right or wrong. There really isn't. Within 8 hours of my father dying, my mother had gotten into their closet and removed all of his clothes. Sweeping all the hangers and got rid of his clothes. Now, one could look at that and say, oh, is she heartless? Does she have no... No. That wasn't it. That was her way of coping with something that... with the loss of the man who she had shared a bed with for 60 years. The important thing is that however we react, we don't do so out of a sense of right or wrong. We just be authentic in what we need to do. Others will save the clothes of the deceased for years. Fine. Be true to yourself. Now, just to cite basic Dharma, we can say that from the conventional sense, yes, we speak of birth and death and life and death, and there's a line between birth and or life and death. But from the point of view of our true nature, our essential nature, there is no division between life and death. There's no death, you could say, and there's no life. Now, this is, I know, confounding to most people who haven't awakened, but maybe this will help. I'm going to read from his book, Roshi Kapila's book. He says, what we call birth is one aspect, death another. From the perspective of our original self, though, nothing is born, nothing passes away. And then he himself quotes an ancient sage, I don't know who that is. There is no death of anyone save only in appearance, even as there is no birth except in seeming. The change from being to becoming seems to be birth, and the change from becoming to being seems to be death. But in reality, no one is ever born, nor does one ever die. Ultimately, there's nothing but this nameless, can't even say it, true self. All of these are just words that reduce what is beyond words. Well, back to the koan now. Zengen taps the coffin, alive or dead, I won't say alive and I won't say dead. Zengen, why won't you say? Dogo said, I won't say. And that's the crux of the koan. Why won't he say? Well, hopefully what was just said would give a clue, because to say either one would be just one side of it, alive or dead. But more than that, this is the monk's Zengen. This is his, obviously, serious question for him. And it's not the job of a Zen teacher to answer the student's questions. Actually, just in the most simple, practical kind of questions about posture or breathing or something. But otherwise, really, our job is to help the student clarify or energize the questioning. And that's what Dogo was doing here. He's not handing an answer to him. Picasso once said, computers are useless, they only give you answers. The real juice, the real fuel of spiritual practice is to nurture the questions, to honor the questions, and not try to come up with any kind of answer as such. Yes, to resolve the questions, but answers are different than the resolving the questions. Answers in this case would have been just plain old dogma or doctrine. He knew because Zengen was so probably overwrought with this question. He may have been struggling with this matter of life and death for years and years, and it would have come to a head through years of practice, sesshins. It would have come to a head at this moment. And Dogo didn't want to deprive him of that, just slapping an answer on it. There's a similar story, again in Chinese, in Chinese Zen history, by a Kyogen. I won't go into what the question was. It's not so important. But Kyogen says to his master, "Then would the master please explain it?" And Guishan, who we mentioned a little while ago, his master Guishan said, "What I might say would merely be my own understanding. How could it benefit your own view?" At that, Kyogen returned to the monk's hall and searched through the books he had collected, but he couldn't find a single phrase that could be used to answer Guishan's question. All right, I'll back up then. Guishan had said to him, "I'm not asking you about what's recorded in or what can be learned from the sutras, but say something from the time before you were born and before you could distinguish objects." That was the challenge. So after Kyogen doesn't get an answer, he goes and pours through his books and finally gives up and says, "A picture of a cake can't satisfy hunger." Famous saying in Zen, that the picture or the description cannot begin to provide the direct experience. So then he burned all his books and said, "During this lifetime I won't study the essential doctrine. I'll just become a common monk and I won't apply my mind to this anymore." He tearfully left Guishan. He went traveling and he settled at the site of the grave of one of the great predecessors, great master. And one day, as Kyogen was scything grass, tall grass, he's cutting it with a scythe, a small piece of the tile was knocked through the air and struck a stalk of bamboo. And upon hearing the sound of the tile hitting the bamboo, Kyogen instantly experienced vast enlightenment. And then he bathed and lit incense. These are rituals, purification rituals. He bathed and lit incense. And bowing in the direction of his teacher, Guishan, he said, "The master's great compassion exceeds that of one's parents. Back then, if you had explained it, then how could this have come to pass?" the pains unique to Zen teachers is wanting to answer the question when to do so would not be in the best interest, the long-term interest of the student. The student is in pain. This is especially, this is most commonly with koans. And you want, part of you wants to just deliver her or him from the pain and give the answer. But really, what would that do? It's just an answer. And so you have to just be there with the student as he or she goes on anguishing over the question. For her sake, for his sake. Now to pick up with the koan again, twice Dogo says, responds, "I won't say." And then on their way home from the service, Sangen is obviously still struggling. He says, "Teacher, if you don't tell me, I will hit you." Now this is unheard of, to strike your teacher. Seriously, I mean, to mime it is something that is something that's come sometimes a response in Doksan, but to actually strike him is just unheard of. But you can imagine the extremity he was in, the turmoil he was in with this question, alive or dead. And then Dogo just sticks to his guns out of compassion for his student, of knowing that he had to leave him with the question. Dogo says, "Hit me if you like, but I won't say." And then that's when Zengen hits Dogen, Dogo. Another text, it says, it's not in the koan here, not in the case, but it says that after Zengen struck Dogo, Dogo said to him, "You should go away for a while. I fear that if the monastery's directors of affairs finds out, he would make trouble for you." Yeah, they would probably kill him because he had done this act of violence against their teacher. I think it's hard for us as Westerners to appreciate the profound respect that a Chinese or Japanese or Korean would have for their teacher. I think it's almost beyond the experience of most people. Sometimes, unfortunately, it's only after the teacher is gone that you come to really appreciate the teacher and realize how much more respect you have than you did at the time. And then some years pass, and Zengen now has to find a new master, and he goes to Sekiso. And Sekiso is one of the greatest of the Chinese masters, and he told him the story of what had happened those years earlier. It seems that Zengen still was struggling with that question. It is the question, the matter of life and death. It is the question, isn't it? What more important question is there for us as human beings? But the question the power of the question can come and go. It can wax and wane. Sometimes people come to Zen practice burning with that question. Maybe it's after a loss of someone, a death of someone close to them, but not necessarily. It's just those who might be sensitive enough or close enough to this number one human question. Why were we born? What happens to us after we die? What is this matter of living and dying? In Buddhism, we see the death of the body as just one kind of dying. But the other kind, what we might call continuous death, dying, is that. It's continuous. It's happening all the time, from moment to moment, from millisecond to millisecond. There is this flux. And this is basic science, that the biological science, the cells of our body are in constant flux, being new cells being born, old cells dying. Our senses aren't keen enough to see this process, to confirm it through our senses. But with microscopes, we see that this is the nature of the body. It's in a state of change all the time. It's like there's this type of animation that shows, I don't know what it's called, but it shows, say, a tree, something that we would see as static. It shows a tree, but shimmering or shaking. The drawings are moving. That's what we're doing. That's what the floor, the walls are doing. It's that state of activity, of change. And this is how we can, over time, come to terms with the death of the physical body, is through seeing in our sitting, seeing that nothing remains the same. Nothing is static. I mean, what we just said about the body is even more obvious with the mind. We see the mind is in constant flux, the thoughts and feelings. What is, could there possibly be that isn't changing, isn't dying and being reborn? So then Zengen says to Sekiso, describes the story, and then this question is left hanging for Sekiso to answer. But he has the same deep, not just compassion for Zengen, but faith in him. It's faith. That's why we don't give answers. Faith that a student will be able to mine his or her nature, mind, and experience it for himself or herself. And sure enough, Sekiso says, "I won't say alive, and I won't say dead." And at these words, Zengen had a realization. So it's not the same Zengen as the one who had been asking this question of Dogo. Some years had passed, maybe not a lot of years, but in the course of those years, he'd been doing a lot of sitting, still, struggling, working with this question. He was not the same, just as none of us is the same from one sesshin to the next. What we may not have been able to understand in one sesshin means nothing in terms of our next sesshin. And then the rest of the koan, we won't take much time with this, because it's just sort of a epilogue. So then one day, Zengen, carrying a hoe, went to the lecture hall and crossed back and forth from east to west, west to east. Can you see him there, pacing back and forth with a hoe on his shoulder, as if he were searching for something? And at that, Sekiso said, "What are you doing?" Now, it's easy when you read that kind of a question to just assume that Sekiso is puzzled. He may not be puzzled at all. He knows what he's doing. He wants to see what Zengen will say he's doing. Zengen said, "I'm looking for the relics of our late master." It's another point of the koan. Sekiso said, "Vast waves spread far and wide, foaming billows flood the skies. What relics of our late master do you seek?" Another point of the koan. And then here's another, Secho. Secho offers verses for each of the koans in the Blue Cliff record. And he comments, not each of them, some of them. And here he comments, "Alas, alas." Very rich with interpretations, those words, "Alas, alas." What is he saying? And finally, Zengen said, "It's a way of acquiring strength," referring to this walking back and forth with the hoe. And then later, another master, Taigen, said, "The late master's relics are still present." It's easy to understand how the common saying that those who we lose, the deceased, live on in our memories, and that's very true. Of course, when we have a memory of someone who's died, right there she is. But that's more of a psychological understanding of this gray area between life and death. What is so important about koans, any koan, but this one is so explicit, is that we face the fact that our days are numbered. What are we doing now to be ready for our death, eventual death of the physical body? All right. Time is up. We'll stop and recite the four vows. Beings without number,
I bow to the brave. endless blind lessons I bowed above root, Dharma gates beyond measure I bow to penetrate, the great way of Buddha I bow to attain, all beings without number I bow to liberate, endless blind lessons I bow above root, Dharma gates beyond measure I bow to penetrate, the direct way of Buddha I bow to attain, all beings without number I bow to liberate, endless blind lessons I bow to above root, Dharma gates beyond measure I bow to penetrate, the great way of Buddha I bow to attain.